The next case is 05-894 and 984, State of Ohio versus Teresa Hull. Mr. Lanza.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, the issue certified, or the conflict certified on appeal is between the 7th and 8th districts and a myriad of other districts cited in the state's brief. The conflict is essentially whether the speedy trial statutes pick up again upon a no contest plea that is subsequently vacated by the appellate court once it's remanded. The state takes the position that a no contest plea and a conviction is tantamount to a trial. And in doing this, they cite very accurately 2311-01, which is a trial is essentially defined as a judicial examination of the issues by the tribunal. Our position, the appellant's position, is that, in fact, the no contest plea and conviction subsequently vacated is not tantamount to a trial.
Is the trial judge required, when there's a no contest plea entered, to review the facts be certain that the conviction and then the sentence are based upon facts?
Yes, Your Honor. And essentially the reason why this plea was vacated is because there is no review of the facts. The state never places into the record upon the plea, and this is found in the two appellate court decisions, or the two preceding appellate court decisions vacating the plea from the 7th District. There's no examination of the facts in the case at bar. I mean, it's even more so in this case because there is no examination of the facts. Essentially, if you approached it from either angle, the state's examination of the facts and circumstances argument, or our argument where you need a trial record in order to cause a first trial to happen because it protects those substantial speedy trial rights, i.e. evidence going cold. Either way you cut it, in this case, it doesn't happen. There is no protection offered to the appellant.
Well, for purposes of the law, though, that we write here, it seems to me that if a trial judge is doing what he or she is supposed to do, that there is a judicial examination of the issues, even in a no contest plea, and that would seem to fit this very general definition of trial in point 01. Would you agree that, aside from the facts in your case, where if the record shows the trial just didn't really do what he was supposed to do, would you disagree with the statement of law that would say a no contest plea taken by a judge is a trial?
I would. Aside from the facts in this case, I would. Because the examination upon a no contest plea is not a sufficient examination to protect what we're trying to protect, or what the legislature is essentially trying to protect with the speedy trial statutes. And one of the main things is the possibility of evidence going cold.
Well, but here the evidence, I mean, if the no contest plea is taken within the speedy trial time, the evidence hasn't gone cold. It's a no contest plea. Evidence hasn't gone cold, has it?
The evidence has not gone cold if the no contest plea is taken within the speedy trial time. But in a situation, and not based upon the facts of this case, where the plea is essentially taken in an incorrect manner, if the no contest plea is entered, as it is here for purposes of an appeal, and the case is remanded, it's possible in the interim that the evidence would go cold, other things would happen. It's necessary to keep this thing moving forward, and our position is the speedy trial statute applies because it protects that absolutely essential and substantial right of the appellant.
Is the judgment of the court following a no contest plea an adjudication on the merits?
The judgment of the court following a no contest plea is an adjudication on the merits. I would agree with that statement.
So that, is, in essence, constitutes the trial that person received. Resolved it by plea, but it's still their trial.
Well, if you examine it from the argument that the state makes, a very general examination of trial, I would concede that. what I'm putting forth today is that in order to protect those substantial rights, if the plea is never vacated, if nothing ever happens in the appellate court, we're not here. There's no issue. But if the plea subsequently comes vacated, and especially so in this case because it's vacated because there is no examination, then speedy trial statute has to reattach and pick up again.
So to get to your position, we really have to hold that a plea, no contest or otherwise, really does not constitute a trial, and therefore the speedy trial rules will still attach.
To get to my broad position, yeah, I would agree with that. However, there is a way to, obviously, and I believe all the justices, or the Chief Justice has alluded to it, there is a way to reconcile this case without coming to that finding. And it's essentially that if there is no examination of the issues as the state puts forward, as is the case in this case, then there is no trial. And speedy trial has to reattach upon remand.
But you do agree that there is an adjudication on the issues to be able to reach a judgment.
To be able to reach a judgment, the merits of the cases are decided, yes.
So whether the trial properly did it or not is really a separate issue. What we, as the Chief said, what we do is we have to make law for every plea, every no contest. And if this judge didn't do it right, that's really not our issue. The issue is, what is the law as to speedy trial when it's a remand on a plea?
And as I've said, when we're talking about a substantial speedy trial rights, and that the plea itself is vacated and becomes this nullity, it must attach. It must reattach, because even if the trial court makes just a decision upon the merits, improperly or properly, without making that trial record, there is no way to protect what we're trying to protect with the speedy trial statute. And it causes a chilling effect on the practice of, you know, if you get a bad decision from a suppression hearing or another motion hearing, entering a no contest plea and taking it to appeal. The chilling effect is, you know, if you're a trial attorney, the only thing to do, if the court decides in the manner that the state would hope, is to push the whole thing right through to trial, whether you have valid trial issues or not, because you're going to lose these issues upon your appeal.
So somebody, counsel, speedy trial is to protect the defendant and have the case brought for an adjudication the first time. Look at jury trials where there's a mistrial. Second trial, there's no Speedy Trial Act concerns. If the jury doesn't reach a verdict, the Speedy Trial Act does not apply on the second time around. Why should this be different?
Because in the circumstances you're alluding to, the trial record is made, and God forbid if a witness should pass away, that witness has been subjected to cross-examination, that witness has been subjected to examination, and absent some other defect, it is possible to make a motion in the trial court to get that transcript of the testimony in. In this case, that can't happen. There isn't. What happens on a proper no contest plea is essentially the state recites a terse rendition of the facts and circumstances upon which the conviction should be based.
Does your rationale also apply to a guilty plea, not a no contest?
No, a guilty plea is a confession, an absolute confession of guilt.
But if the plea is reversed, you're back to ground zero and you have all those issues of no preservation of testimony that you have in a no contest.
On my argument about the substantial rights of the appellant, no, a guilty plea is a confession of guilt. If we look at State v. Parker, which
I rely on heavily. If the plea is reversed, the guilty plea is reversed, there's no confession remaining. You're back to ground zero.
I would agree with that. However, upon the no contest plea, as the court's well aware, is not a confession. If I enter a confession and then subsequently get it vacated of guilt, and then subsequently get it vacated for some reason, I have I have confessed. I've stopped everything. A plea of no contest, and I don't even think the state disagrees with this position, a plea of no contest in and of itself does not waive my appellate rights the same way a guilty plea would, does not waive my appellate right to assert a speedy trial issue the way that a guilty plea would.
Don't you only have the right to assert the speedy trial issue before the no contest plea, whatever happened before that? And you don't have those issues before us, that there was a exhausting of the speedy trial time before the entry of the plea, the no contest plea.
There is no exhausting of the speedy trial time prior to the entry of the no contest plea.
Plea, by virtue of the fact it's an adjudication, once the judge accepts it, prosecutor does what they need to do at the hearing, the recitation of the appropriate information, and then the no contest plea, the judge makes a finding of guilt.
Yes, the judge makes.
That stops the whole process just as though it were a guilty plea and just as though the judge had accepted a jury verdict.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't stop the whole process in the same way, though. It stops the whole process in the trial court, yes, I agree, in that similar
manner.
And
it triggers the time for appeal.
But not in the same manner. If there's a guilty plea, it's in the same manner nearly as a trial, yes, but if there's a guilty plea, and I might be referring to a prior question, the guilty plea waives numerous appellate rights, including the right.
But not all. There are issues.
But not all. Sure. But the no contest plea is in place not as a confession, but as simply a non-contestation of the allegations in the complaint. And
whatever the strategy is for using a no contest plea is irrelevant here.
I understand that, but the reason why I refer to that is it doesn't stop it in the same way. No contest plea preserves a myriad of appellate rights and doesn't conclude the case in the same manner as a guilty plea would. I hope.
What's the distinction?
In a guilty plea, for instance, in this case.
Let's say a jury trial where there's a guilt found by a trier of fact, and then that's how the case gets on track for an appeal.
Yes.
What's the distinction?
The distinction, my argument is the distinction is that in a trial situation where you have a guilty verdict, you have a trial record to preserve those speedy trial rights, as I think I've said before. The trial record in and of itself, you've put all that evidence in the can. You have it there. In a no contest plea, you don't. You have that terse rendition of the facts. You don't have the protection of the substantial rights of the defendant. It just doesn't happen. I mean, aside from the tactical maneuvering, and it is a tactical maneuver, obviously, it doesn't occur when we're talking about a no contest plea. The same protection isn't afforded the appellant. That's the distinction.
Mr. Lanzo, I would like to take you to the speedy trial statute that may be helpful here. I think your argument is that even if the first proceeding, that the no contest proceeding, even if that's an adjudication, a trial, that when the case is sent back on remand, the speedy trial statute starts again. Isn't that your argument?
When it's in the case of a no contest plea, right. Even if it's an adjudication upon the merits, yes.
2945.71, of course, says a person against whom a charge is pending in a court, not a record, shall be brought to trial within 30 days after the person's arrest or the service of summons. And then, of course, it's 90 days here. There's no express provision. General Assembly has not provided for this situation, has it? Because it anticipates only the first trial, the statute, the speedy trial statute. So how do we then make the jump to where you want us to be, to say, well, it also applies on remand when the statute is based on service of summons, arrest and service of summons?
Because what I don't contest is, I, and if I'm misunderstanding the question, I apologize, but what I'm not expounding is that somehow speedy trial continues to run during this appellate period after no contest plea. I concede speedy trial, both statutorily and constitutionally, is told during that time period and wouldn't pick up again until the remand. until the case comes back to the appellate court. And the trial court, as gatekeeper of the speedy trial rights of the defendant, is in perfect position to protect this simply by not accepting a no contest plea and having the case proceed to trial.
That would place quite a burden. I mean, it almost being practically impossible, wouldn't it? If the statute picks up again and there may be 45 days remaining, could be less than 45 days, that's pretty swift. It's a pretty short time in which to set the new trial and get it, isn't it?
Well, we have relatively short statutory periods, I agree, regardless. However, the trial court doesn't have to accept that no contest plea. The trial court cannot accept the no contest plea.
Well, yes, but we're writing law here to tell trial courts and courts of appeals, the trial courts, what the responsibilities are under the statute when there's a remand after no contest plea. I mean, we can't. I don't think we can take in all the various factors that may occur. They have to work within the law. And if we say the statute then recommences, that I think are your words, and it doesn't begin anew. You don't get a new 90 days, but you get what's left of the original 90 days. That's your argument. Is that correct?
That is my argument. Yes.
You could have a situation where you have only 10 days or 5 days remaining, couldn't you?
Yes, but upon the no contest plea, presumably the trial court would be aware of that situation because the trial court, along with the state, is strapped with the responsibility by the legislature and by case law, actually, to bring the case to trial within the speedy trial limits.
The trial court's not going to expect that its decision is going to be reversed, is it? Trial courts don't assume that they're going to be reversed by courts of appeals when they decide whether to take a no contest plea.
I don't believe that a trial court would presume assume that it would be reversed by a court of appeals. However, a trial court certainly would be aware if there was very short time left in the speedy trial time. Trial court certainly would be well aware of that and well aware of, with this court's guidance in this case, well aware of the fact that this is not a case where they need to take a no contest plea.
So trial courts would have to keep some sort of log of every no contest case, track whether they're appealed or not, track when the opinion comes out, and track when the remand is issued to make sure if they only had a 2-day left, they got it set in 2 days. I mean, that's totally unworkable.
And counsel, as a practical matter, too.
Let's answer
I'm
Justice
sorry.
Stratton's question
how do
first.
How do you work with something like that?
It's not as complicated a tracking issue as
I was a trial judge. Yes, it is. We never knew when Court of Appeals opinions came down.
Oh, I understand that, and I recognize that end of it might be less practical. However, the practical end of it is when you have the case in front of you, most trial courts are very aware when pending cases have speedy trial problems. And very aware of their responsibilities to guard against the statute running. And if a no contest plea is presented, say, in this case, we deal with the 90-day statute on a misdemeanor of the first degree, if a no contest plea suddenly is entered on the 89th day or is attempted to be entered on the 89th day, the trial court's aware of this problem.
So I, as a trial court, would say, I'm not going to resolve this case today. Take your plea because you got to know speedy trial and I might possibly get reversed, so I'm going to force you to a trial so I don't have to worry about that?
Well, what I believe is if the holding is an opposite to my position, that forcing through to trial at all times will happen anyway. It's judicial. I understand that your position is, or maybe, from your question, that it's judicially inefficient to have the trial court do this gatekeeping process on these short statutes. However, it's our position that essentially it's judicially inefficient to hold any other way because you would force cases through to trial. If I'm going to lose an appellate right by entering a no contest plea and taking it up on appeal, if I'm going to lose this speedy trial, if it should occur, appellate right, I'm just going to try the case because I still have the issue from the suppression.
Let's see if Justice Lansinger has her question.
It was the same as Justice Stratton, because usually, let's say the Speedy Trial Act is running the court will set the case for trial. And very often, the no contest pleas are negotiated the day of trial. If we accept what you're saying, if a no contest plea were vacated, the defendant would be released, and there would be no possibility of any type of retrial. So I can't imagine that trial judges would accept no contest pleas on the last day.
Yeah, I agree, and probably shouldn't.
Counsel, I've been sitting here listening, and I'm curious what interest of justice is served by your position.
The interest of justice served by my position by having a no contest plea and subsequent conviction not being tantamount to a trial, it are the same interests of justice that we are trying to protect with the speedy trial statute. It's that evidence going cold, witnesses die. You need a trial record to protect
defendants.
That.
Defendants frequently waive the speedy trial.
Absolutely.
Right. And why shouldn't we conclude that when a defendant opts to plead no contest, that is tantamount to waiving speedy trial?
Because it's not. The no contest plea protects these appellate issues, and unlike a guilty plea would.
I understand it protects a whole lot of issues, but it doesn't necessarily protect speedy trial. We could interpret, our interpretation could be that when you plead no contest, that has the practical effect of waiving speedy trial from that point on.
Certainly, your interpretation could be that. I don't believe
and
it should
why,
be.
And why wouldn't that serve the interest of justice better than your position?
Because it would have the same chilling effect that I've discussed and that with the other justices. If I as trial attorney, if I see this issue, or if this issue is expected, or if I am under the impression that by entering my no contest plea, I am going to waive appellate rights.
No, just the speedy trial right.
Even just the speedy trial right, I'm going to try the case.
What you're trying to set up is a trap for the prosecution, for the state. And I don't see how that serves the interest of justice.
Not trying to set up a trap for the state.
I think you are.
I respect, obviously, any opinion coming from your position.
We've got you 7 minutes over your time, so, Mr. Lanzo, thank you.
Thank you.
You have 30
you
seconds
much.
To rebuttal. Mr. Cartwright-Jones.
Good morning, Your Honors, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please this court. As said, my name is Reese Cartwright-Jones, arguing for Mahoning County. The state brings 2 points to this court this morning. First, as we argued on brief, the state's position that a no-contest plea coupled with a guilty verdict is tantamount to that original trial accords with Ohio law. Indeed, under the state's position, there's no need to overrule either McCormick or Parker. And moreover, if this court were to adopt the state's position on that point, justice with regard to Ms. Hull's speedy trial rights and the speedy trial rights of all defendants is still served. So on that first point, the issue in conflict here is basically one sentence in McCormick that the Eighth District repeated incidentally in State versus Parker, stating that the speedy trial statute applies to cases in which the defendant has had no trial, double quote, no trial, again, i.e. pled no contest. But the key here is that finding of guilt, and in that sentence, the Eighth District didn't refer in either one of those cases to a no contest plea coupled with a guilty verdict.
Yeah, now, that was sort of just sort of dicta, wasn't it? I mean, just sort of a statement thrown into the opinion, it seems to me.
In Parker, yes, Your Honor, that was
really
the case.
Didn't really need to be there, so now we have a conflict case because it's there.
Indeed, reviewing the record and the conflict was certified under prior appellate counsel. In fact, under a time where there was an appellate counsel void in Mahoning County, we didn't oppose the certification of conflict. But indeed, it's possible to find no conflict between Parker and the Seventh District's decision in Hall 2.
But as a prosecutor, is it an issue that we should decide to make it clear?
Indeed, now that the issue is before the court, and now that there's a lot of scattered unpublished law on this point, a clean decision from the highest court is in good order. Yes, Your Honor.
Counsel, is there? I was more than a little tough on Mr. Lanzo, but is there no limit on the time at which a trial would have to take place in this circumstance?
Indeed, there is a limit, Your Honor. Now, the statutory speedy trial, Ohio's statutory speedy trial, doesn't attach by virtue of the fact that the legislature, the General Assembly, didn't mention anything about remand in that statute. But absent the statutory limit, it's clear from the highest level that the United States Supreme Court standard in Barker versus Wingo attaches. So there are 365 days after remand. Now, it's distinctly possible that that after this court releases a decision in this case, if this court releases a decision in favor of the state's position, that the state legislature may go back and add a remand paragraph into the speedy trial statute, which, given these proceedings, might be a good idea. But it's not there. Hence, Barker, the U.S. Supreme Court case, is the only applicable
law.
How
much time expired here?
If I'm not mistaken, it was 154 days.
So it's outside the 90.
Indeed, it is outside the 90. Yes, Your Honor.
And that's the same standard that currently applies in Ohio law to trials that are reversed. They have the U.S. Supreme Court constitutional standard of a reasonable time to bring them to a retrial.
Again, on reversal, insofar as the statutory speedy trial section doesn't attach to remands, reversals, as the state submits no contest pleas coupled with guilt, we're under the general provisions in Barker.
So general provisions of Barker that currently apply to retrials simply would apply to remands on no contest if we adopt the state's position. Same standard for every remand.
The state submits that that's the only applicable law, given that the General Assembly didn't address it in the speedy trial statute. Yes, Your Honor. And to that end, I guess that brings me to the second point, which came up addressing my friend from Mahoning County. Is there an interest of justice served in the state's position? I'd submit that there is. It's not as if on remand Ms. Hull or any other defendant on remand would be stripped of her right to a speedy trial. Now,
why shouldn't the clock start over with day one? Once it's finally back, why shouldn't you be on a new clock?
The state submits that the statute doesn't address remands, and doesn't address remands either by attaching the remainder of the speedy trial statute.
But I have the same question you had to Mr. Lanzo. Wouldn't that be in the interest of justice start the clock over?
In the same sense that it doesn't address remands, in the same sense that it doesn't attach the balance of the 90 days, it also doesn't say give a new 90 days. Again, the state submits that the only applicable law comes from Washington, and that there isn't a cognizable interpretation that you can put on Ohio's speedy trial statute.
But we could find that the legislature has determined as a matter of public policy that 90 days is what you have to get to trial, absent a waiver by the defendant. And so, although it is silent on remand, that they've expressed the public policy of what a speedy trial is in Ohio, and that we just engraft that on the remand situation.
I come in somewhat naive to the legislative history of the speedy trial statute, but from the tenor of that statute, I think one can determine that it was not only serving the defendant's interests, but also it had in mind sort of a provisions of judicial administration, that there's a certain amount of time in which a court has to clear its docket.
So what would be the argument for a longer period of time?
Well,
on remand after appeal.
As came from the bench during Mr. Lanzo's discussion, oftentimes a court of common pleas isn't going to know what came from the court of appeals. Oftentimes the state's going to have to.
But the prosecutor's really the one that's charged with keeping track of the clock. I mean, who looks bad if it gets out before failure of a speedy trial? It's the prosecutor, isn't it?
Indeed it is. But
So the prosecutor knows when the Court of Appeals has done something.
It's actually not always the case, but yes, the state's charged with bringing the defendant to trial speedily. But again, I have to turn to that point that there's a void in that statute, and that there are a handful. Indeed, it seems every Ohio appellate district that addresses this point says this only attaches to original trials and says nothing about
You don't seem to use. You're not urging us in response to Justice Pfeiffer's questions to apply the words of the statute that say shall be, that the trial shall be brought, or the matter shall be brought to trial within 30 days after the person's arrest or the service of summons. That relates only to the first trial, does it not? Are we not bound by those words, or should we just not pay attention to them?
Indeed, I think you are bound by those words, and indeed I think that's why the if I'm not mistaken, the third, fifth, Seventh and Second Appellate Districts so determined that the statute doesn't attach. Again, the legislature can go back and redraft that statute. It's not the case that the legislature legislates everything. If they intentionally left a void or mistakenly left the void, that's not the issue here. But we have law from Washington that fills in that void and preserves.
So how does this work if the defendant's in jail?
Well, again, back to the
you had a whole year to
your honor.
Let
your
him sat there if
your honor would be referring to the triple count provision of the the General Assembly didn't draft the triple count provision of the statutory.
Here we're dealing with somebody who's presumably out on the streets and is
in the 7th District. Usually the appellant gets a stay of execution pending appeal for the obvious reason that the sentence would be served by the time the case came up on appeal.
But you could be dealing with a felon.
And indeed, in some of these cases, there were.
What we decide here will apply there as well, will it not?
As a matter of dicta, addressing the triple count provision. But again, the triple count provision isn't addressed to remands either. The state simply urges this court to adopt the plain black letter of the statute and fill in the void with the law that's available to fill in that void.
May I ask you to go back to your initial point that there may not be a conflict here?
If I may address that, Your Honor, yes. To go back to that point, we're looking at one sentence in McCormick, which was a dispositive sentence in McCormick, repeated incidentally, as Your Honor said, in State versus Parker, i.e. pled no contest. McCormick's an interesting case. McCormick, on the possession charge, never had a finding of guilt. Something like 274 days went by after McCormick entered his no contest plea, but before any finding of guilt or any final adjudication was made on that no contest plea. Now, under State versus Mintz, another 8th District case, that would be clearly outside the scope of the speedy trial statute because we have a plea but nothing else, and that's certainly a sound decision under the basic policy of the speedy trial statute or the general constitutional provisions on speedy trial, because Mr. McCormick was out wondering what was going to happen to him with no final disposition on the no contest plea. So that's how McCormick is distinguishable from this case. No finding of guilt, and the state submits that this court can draw a bright line rule between cases that have had a finding of guilt and cases that haven't had a finding of guilt. Hence McCormick is directly distinguishable, and Parker is distinguishable insofar as it wasn't even a no contest case. It was a guilty plea case in which the court just incidentally cited that language from McCormick, indicating when the speedy trial statute would and wouldn't apply.
So you think the adjudication of guilt, whether by trial, by guilty plea, or by no contest plea, constitutes the end of the initial phase, and then we move to the remand as the other situation.
Indeed,
is that what you're advocating?
That's what the state submits, Your Honor. That's the cap, and that's the final. Indeed, the final appealable order. Otherwise, we would be looking at cases captioned as interlocutory appeals.
Thank you very much.
I see that I have 3 minutes left. If there are no further questions from the bench, I'd like to wrap up. Thank you for your time this morning. And again, submit that there really is no conflict in this case. And given that there is applicable law from Washington, D.C., the rights of defendants will be protected if this court adopts the state's position. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Cartwright-Jones. Mr. Lanzo, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Your Honor, you did allow me 30 seconds, correct?
30 seconds.
Your Honor, I just
see what you can do with 30 seconds.
This can be wrapped up there is a conflict here. Obviously, the court's found a conflict, certified the conflict. The conflict can be resolved, and I understand we're writing law for everything. If the court agrees with the state's position on a no contest plea, the conflict can be resolved simply by narrowly tailoring the rule to situations in which a plea, be it no contest, be it guilty, is defectively taken, because there's no examination of the facts as the state's propounded in their brief in that circumstance. With that, I thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.